Hey, everyone. Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.
Time for your March Madness fix.
Fox, baseline, up for the shot, done, off the glass, the game is over.
Gonzaga, the slipper still fits.
It's over, Michigan has won a national championship.
I got a feeling.
Holy mackerel,
tonight's gonna be a good night.
The shot, yes, the shot by Tate George, wins it.
Williams could tie it with a three, he does.
Smart takes the shot.
Oh! Indiana wins the championship.
Oh, so now Valpo's going to have to go the length of the court.
All I need is a miracle.
It's to Jenkins, to Drew for the win.
Gone.
Oh! They did it.
Bryce Drew did it.
Valpo has won the game. A miracle.
One shining moment you knew.
Wittenberg. Oh, that's a long one.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up.
Yes! Kamara gets it ahead. Cooper out in front of everybody. Gets it to Katie Dunn. Her shot is up. No good! And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Welcome to Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 960 AM WSBT. We are streaming live at WSBTRadio.com, our free WSBT radio app. A live video feed right now of the studio on the Twitch app, which is a free download on your phone if you'd like to acquire that. 8 minutes after 5 o'clock, my name is Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, the publisher and editor, Hall of Fame writer at InsideIndySports.com, covering Notre Dame athletics as part of the Rivals Network. Eric is with me in the 6 o'clock hour. We're going to talk name a starting quarterback timetable for the Fighting Irish in just a couple of moments, early observations on the linebacker position. How about three keys for the Notre Dame women's basketball team tomorrow, taking on Oregon State in the Sweet 16. Eric covers the Irish women's basketball team for InsideIndySports.com, so you'll have those keys in just a couple of moments. Our chat recap from InsideIndySports.com at the bottom of the hour. As always, our Twitter question of the day in the 6 o'clock hour: why the Cubs will win the NL Central and the Cardinals are going to stink again. I'll lay that out for you. And you know what? They're playing to their portfolio right now, down 5-1 to the Dodgers in the fourth inning. Also, we've got our Notre Dame football week in review, where we talk about Riley Leonard's injury, Benjamin Morrison's injury, some Notre Dame football recruiting talk. That's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. And we wrap up the program with our sports wagering segment, We Going to Sizzler. Well, we were kind of... well, not kind of. We were very negative about our baseball team, the Cardinals, yesterday. And, hey, they're playing to form right now, down 5-1 in the fourth inning at Dodger Stadium. So, see, look how smart we are. After four innings, it's going perfectly to plan. And it's not like the NFL, where you're going to get the number one pick if you're the worst team. They've got that lottery now, so nothing is guaranteed. So, what am I going to do the next 161 games? Besides watch this mess.
Yard work?
I may have to. Hey, by the way, hey, Cub fans, holy cow. The Cubs starting lineup is out for tonight's matchup with the Texas Rangers. So would you like to know who's starting for the Cubs tonight?
Why not?
Oh, why not? Let's do it. Your leadoff hitter playing left field is the switch hitter, former South Bend Cub, Ian Happ. Hitting second, the phenom of spring training. He was hitting bombs left and right. Seiya Suzuki, he's in right field. Batting third, the center fielder, Cody Bellinger. Hitting in the cleanup spot, a South Bend Cub Midwest League champion, the designated hitter, Christopher Morrell. Hitting fifth, the shortstop, Dansby Swanson. Hitting sixth, the newcomer, they got him from the Dodgers, first baseman, Michael Busch. Hitting seventh, interesting, Craig Counsell moves Horner from the top of the lineup where he hit last year under David Ross. Horner is hitting seventh in the lineup today for Chicago. Nick Madrigal, the third baseman, hitting eighth. And your catcher and batting ninth is Yan Gomes. And former South Bend Cub hurler Justin Steele is on the mound for the Cubs in Arlington against the Texas Rangers, the world champion Texas Rangers, tonight at 7:35. So those are your Chicago Cubs. It's interesting, a different manager looks at the lineup differently. Counsell went with Horner and Swanson at the top all year. They're hitting fifth and seventh tonight. So there you go. The Notre Dame guy is mixing things up in Chicago to start the year. Good luck, Cub fans. I think you're going to win the division, so have fun.
They have to play the Dodgers at some point, too.
Aren't we lucky to play four against them to start the year? That is absolutely glorious. How about two? Well, I don't want to say positives because we're talking about an injury to the Notre Dame quarterback, Riley Leonard, but let's try to find a positive in all this. Eric, we knew going into Notre Dame spring practice that we were going to have four quarterbacks in camp getting reps as they tried to groom Leonard and Jelly while having a quarterback competition. Then you're trying to develop guys like Minshew and Carr. So this was a very interesting spring practice going in. So now Riley Leonard is likely out for the spring with the right ankle surgery, the second surgery he's had since January, which means Angeli, Minshew, and Carr move up a spot in spring practice. I don't think, Eric, even if there were no injuries in spring camp, you were expecting Marcus Freeman to name a starter after the blue goal game. I think it was a situation, didn't you feel like it was going to go into fall camp?
I think he would have liked to do that. I think the fan base may have named the starter. I mean, that's basically what happened in the last blue gold game. You know, most of the people didn't see the practices that we saw. And quite honestly, Tyler Buchner and Hartman were a lot tighter in terms of performance in the early parts of spring practice as Sam Hartman learned the system. But I mean, in the blue gold game, it was so plain for everybody to see. But I don't think he would have been really eager to do that. And maybe would like to go into fall camp and name it the first few days of fall camp. Obviously, this year, that timetable changes.
So what do you think the timetable is, the realistic timetable, considering Leonard is not going to probably be on the practice field at all in the spring? Even if he does, it's not like two practices are going to make a decision for the coaching staff. Hey, that's our guy. What do you think is a realistic timetable for Marcus and the staff to name a starting quarterback?
I think you've got to give it a couple weeks in training camp to see everybody. And I still think the biggest message has to go to the team. The team has to see who the number one quarterback is. If you just hand it to Riley Leonard, based on what Steve Angeli did in the Sun Bowl, based on what he's doing this spring, you are sending a horrible message to your team about their own position competitions, that you're just going to say, hey, look, you know, this guy projects, so that's who we're going to give the job to. He didn't have to earn it. And so I just don't think it's realistic to make that determination any time before then. And then really, does Marcus try to play coy with Texas A&M? I don't know that Mike Elko will be fooled because Riley Leonard played for Mike Elko last year when both of them were at Duke.
But, and played hurt.
And played hurt. They may both play that game. Texas A&M has a quarterback that's got some injury issues that probably is going to be their starter. So they can both play that game leading up to the August 31st opener.
Is there any concern for you? And I ask this knowing we have an experienced, veteran, terrific offensive coordinator in Mike Denbrock. Do you have any concerns that you're going to have a quarterback competition going into fall camp, knowing that the two quarterbacks' traits are so different?
Not really, because I think Mike Denbrock dealt with that at LSU, and he dealt with it somewhat at Cincinnati too, in that their backups weren't all aligned with what their starter was doing there. And then when you look at LSU last year, you look at the backups at LSU last year, they were more classic pro style quarterbacks than they were. And that even played out like in the Alabama game. Jaden Daniels got hurt in that game. And then they had a quarterback come in that was a pro style guy. So I don't think it's, you know, you just call different pages from the playbook. The playbook doesn't change. Now, maybe it throws the offensive lineman off a little bit, but Angeli is more agile and a better runner and a more willing runner, certainly, than Sam Hartman was.
Yeah.
We saw that in the Sun Bowl. He was, you know, diving for first downs and, you know, I mean, he was like, hey, you know, it's the end of the season. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. Had it been, let's say, Riley Leonard and a young Jimmy Clausen or a young Tommy Rees, yeah, then that's a huge problem because those guys are basically statues when they were quarterbacks.
So we're going to have to be patient.
Yes.
And there is, like you said, a good chance, if Marcus Freeman wants to, keep it all quiet. So Texas A&M has to guess. But here's the thing. Mike Elko knows Riley Leonard, so I don't think it's as big of a challenge preparing for two quarterbacks compared to maybe other situations, because Mike has a terrific feel of what he can do, and he also knows the weaknesses that he could possibly expose in this matchup.
Right, and it's, you have film of LSU and Texas A&M playing, even though
that's a good point.
Elko wasn't the head coach there. I mean, they can see what their personnel looks like, how they might match up to Mike Denbrock system and stuff. So I don't think it's going to be a complete blind date kind of thing.
Okay, next up, I'm going to get your early observations of the linebacker position, because we've spent the last 2 years listening to Irish fans be very excited about the young linebackers. In many cases, why aren't they playing, Eric? Why are the veterans still out there? Well, here we are. Guys like JT Bertrand and Maris Leofau have moved on. So these young guys that fans have been drilling for are going to have an opportunity to get on the field this year. Now, you got Jack Kaiser back. That's a grizzly old veteran who can play really anywhere across the board at the linebacker spot, giving Al Golden a lot of versatility. So as you've watched a few practices, I know only one full practice, has anything stood out from watching the linebackers, how they've used him, or individual performances?
Both. You do see the speed and athleticism, and I think it's kind of interesting you bring up Jack Kaiser. When we talked to Max Boa heading into the spring, he said Jack Kaiser was the most improved linebacker out of that whole group. He's 232 now. The Lauren Lando program has really been good to him as far as size and speed. And he plays faster because he can gain a half step by just knowing so much and having such good instincts. Everywhere else, so there's seven of them on campus right now. There will be two joining them in the spring, Teddy Rizak and Bodhi Cahoon. I'd say of those two, Bodhi Cahoon would be closer to playing, but I don't know how he gets on the field with the other seven linebackers they have. So right now, I would say Drake Bowen is your starting middle linebacker, and Kingston Viliamu-Asa is pushing. And that's they're very athletic at that position. Preston Zinter can play either of those inside positions, and I'm telling you, this guy is really underrated. His brother, Zach, was an All-American at Michigan as an offensive lineman this past season. Preston can move and really good tackler. Kahanu Kia is back from the Mormon mission. He's backing up Jack Kaiser at that weak side linebacker position. I think maybe the two most exciting guys and the guys that I really want to see more of are Jalen Snead and Jaden Osbury. They're at the Rover. They both can play inside. It's funny because Osbury came really a tweener size. He was kind of a big safety. He's bigger than Snead now. He's an inch taller and 2 pounds heavier at 6'2", 220. Snead is 6'1", 218. Those guys are breathtaking athletes. Can they be breathtaking linebackers? That's what this spring is about, is putting them in that position. Osbury's instincts are amazing, and we saw that actually in last year's Blue Gold game. We were both like, who's 23? Now, yeah. He's 4 now, but he was 23 in the game last year. Jalen Snead is a top 50 talent. You know, Notre Dame doesn't get a lot of those kind of linebackers. Now they've got them in back-to-back-to-back classes, and they probably will get another of those kind of guys. Tyler James has put in a future cast for Anthony Sacca, who's Tony Sacca's son, former Penn State quarterback, a Penn State alum. Al Golden lured him away from Penn State, it sounds like. But those guys, I think we keep waiting. Can Snead turn into Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah? I don't think so. I think what he's going to evolve into is a weak side linebacker. When Kaiser leaves next year, your hope is that he kills it as a weak side linebacker and that he makes some of those strides as a Rover this year. Osbury is the guy that I think has the best chance to give you Owusu-Koramoah kind of traits in terms of coverage. I just don't think Snead is going to get there. Now, Owusu-Koramoah's little brother, Notre Dame, is trying to recruit into the 2025 class, and he definitely has those traits.
So Kaiser, right now, you're projecting him to play his best position. He can play all three.
Yeah, yes.
Go ahead.
He finally is at his best position.
Is that because they want him there, or is that filling a hole in which if he wasn't there, they're not as confident?
They want him there.
Okay.
They want him in the middle of the action. His body size fits it even better now at 232 instead of being in the 220s. You know, he can, I think, help direct the front seven when they need, you know, kind of like J.D. Bertrand did from the middle linebacker position last year. Kaiser can do it from the weak side linebacker position. But, yeah, he is. I mean, it's Jalen Snead's best position, too. But right now, Kaiser is further along in terms of being assignment correct and all the other things. I mean, if there were a combine, Snead would win it.
Yeah.
I mean, no doubt. But, I mean, right now, Kaiser is a really good linebacker. And, you know, he should buy Pro Football Focus stock. They have always loved Jack Kaiser.
Eric Hansen, publisher and editor at InsideNDSports.com. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat at 525. Our final opening topic, Eric's three keys for the Notre Dame women's basketball team when they play in the Sweet 16 tomorrow against Oregon State. The game will tip off at 2:30 on Live 99.9. Pregame coverage is at 2:15. I know Oregon State is a pretty balanced team, and they're very stingy defensively, only giving up 59 points per game. The good news is the Irish are, what, at 79, if I remember right, points per game, right around in there. So give me your three keys. What do the Irish need to do to beat Oregon State and get to the Elite Eight?
The biggest differences between these two teams, where Notre Dame has the advantage, is turnover margin. Notre Dame is 21st. Oregon State is 329 out of 349. more so, they're not a turnover committing machine. They just don't force any. I mean, they're dead last in forcing turnovers. So they defend you differently. They just try to get your face with their shots, but they don't turn you over. Notre Dame needs to exploit that both ways. They need to have their transition going. They need to turn Oregon State over, get the fast break going, get Hannah Hidalgo going. They also need to take advantage that Oregon State isn't going to pressure them and get into their offense and get the ball to their shooters in places that Oregon State isn't expecting. I think what throws teams when they try to defend Notre Dame, they're thinking, well, we only have to defend three people. Well, Anna DeWolf is shooting 67% from three in the NCAA tournament. You know, Nat Marshall will pick up her points here and there, but it's the Citron and Westbeld matchups that are difficult too, because Westbeld is like Pat Garrity was for the men's team way back decades ago. It's the stretch four that's so unconventional in how she plays, in that you don't see a lot of fours going up and taking top of the key three-point shot. So if you're going to man up with her, you're drawing a really good rebounder away from the basket and probably somebody that's not going to be able to get into her face. When she's on, she's a very difficult matchup. Ole Miss really struggled early in that game with Westbelt. And Sonia Citron can hurt you in so many different ways. She is the Sonia Citron we thought we'd see all season. That's who she's turned into. You know, that knee injury she had in the middle of the season, that's gone. So you're seeing this 6'1 guard with length that can drive to the basket, that can chuck three-pointers. So she's a really difficult matchup too. And I think that's where Oregon State could get into trouble. So number two for me, as far as the matchup though, is Notre Dame staying over out of foul trouble with their bigs. They need Westbelt to be on the floor. Westbelt and Marshall ended up getting four fouls in the Ole Miss game, but it was really late. They weren't sitting with a second foul. They weren't sitting with a third foul. They picked those fouls up late when the game was basically decided. So, and then, you know, they're going to have to be on their game with defense. Oregon State is one of the better shooting teams in the country. Reagan Beers, the 6'4 post player, sophomore, All-American, leading shooter in the country at 67%. And so who's going to defend her? You know, I think ideally you'd like to play a little bit of zone, but you have to be careful because of their three-point shooting. They have so many three-point shooters. This is a very similar matchup to the first time Notre Dame played Virginia Tech when Elizabeth Kitley did play. You had a team with three-point shooters in this really strong post. So what did Notre Dame do in that game? They got very physical with Virginia Tech, and they were able to get away with it in that game. Their man defense was really good. Well, Kylie Watson isn't on the team anymore, healthy. She's a cheerleader now. So that takes that strategy kind of away. So Notre Dame's going to have to mix defenses and be really good with it.
Did you see the spread for this game?
I did not. I think it's 3.5, isn't it?
It is. Notre Dame now by 3.
Okay.
According to DraftKings Sportsbook, and the over-under is 132.5. So they're expecting a fairly low-scoring game.
Well, you know, when you look at Notre Dame on the season, I think they're 90th in scoring defense, which doesn't sound very good. But remember, they gave up 100 to South Carolina in the opener, and that number's hard to tamp down. In their 10-game winning streak, 8 of those games being against NCAA tournament teams, they're allowing 57.5 points per game. Nobody's hit 70 against them in the calendar year 2024.
All right. 2:30 tomorrow, Sweet 16, Notre Dame and Oregon State. And it sounds like if the Irish win, they would play Sunday around 1 o'clock against the winner of South Carolina and Indiana.
That's what our media notes tell us. And then it never appears anywhere officially, like on an NCAA.com website or ESPN, but we are anticipating 1 o'clock since that's what they're telling the media behind the scenes, so okay. I don't know.
All right. Hopefully we have to worry about that.
Get the church in and watch basketball.
Amen.
Okay.
5:30 is our time.
Jelly beans.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Yeah, get your egg hunt done, your church done, and then it's basketball time. We will talk some more Notre Dame football using Eric's chat questions from InsideIndySports.com next on WNBA.
You can listen to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat live or on demand with our free WSBT Radio app. Just search WSBT Radio in the App Store and Google Play. Now, back to local sports talk on Sports Beat with your host, Darren Pritchett.
I'm alongside Eric Hansen, Hall of Fame writer, publisher, and editor at InsideIndySports.com. 5:35 is our time. Every Wednesday, Eric will host a chat, taking questions from Irish football fans at InsideIndySports.com. It's Wednesday at noon. Here are some of the questions, and rather than reading them, you will hear vocally from Eric his answers this time around. Rich from Key West, which returning players that were backups on last year's squad do you think have the best chance to secure a starting job at positions where players were brought in from the transfer portal? That is...
That's a word problem in math. That's like if a train going 60 miles an hour had oranges on it and there's a bus with apples, how much is the price of lemons? But I got all the parameters. So there are 8 scholarship transfers. Not all of these guys are projected starters. And some of them are coming in at positions. Like Bo Collins is coming into the position where there's an incumbent in Jaden Thomas. So that throws that out. So of the ones where there are guys that are projected starters, let's say Riley Leonard, RJ Oben and stuff, I think the position where a backup from last year has the best chance to start is really kind of an interesting one. And it's an open position because the starter isn't still there. It's the field receiver position. So Chris Smith was brought in, Chris Mitchell, I'm sorry, was brought in. But I think K.K. Smith or Cam Williams could challenge him. I do expect Mitchell to win that job, but the best chance, K.K. Smith, I'm telling you what, has jumped up out of oblivion to, I think, intrigue the coaching staff. He was running around really fast on practice on Wednesday. They're looking at him as a punt return option. And he was running with the ones on Wednesday. Now, Mitchell wasn't available to do that on Wednesday. But I thought, okay. And then Cam Williams was a borderline five-star kind of guy. I think once Cam Williams stops swimming in the playbook, I think we'll start to see him make a little bit more of a push too. A guy with good size and track speed. So I think that's the position.
Is there a little bit of surprise in your voice that KK is showing this?
It's a shocking surprise because we just didn't know anything about him. And when I saw him last year, you know, he had gotten shoulder surgery. He gets on campus, has shoulder surgery. He's walking around in a sling, and it's like, my God, my grandkids are bigger than him, you know, or at least way more. And you really didn't hear much about him. And then he got into the bowl practices, and he finally played in a game in the Sun Bowl game, but they didn't throw to him. So you're just – and he was a 3-star guy. You're just kind of like, you know. But I'll tell you what, he's a – good-looking athlete. Now, we'll see how that translates, but he definitely has a speed. I can see why they were interested in him.
Palm Beach Irish is from Milan, Italy. That's an interesting combination.
Well, he's in Milan right now.
Oh, just right now. I thought maybe he lived there.
Yeah. He's talking about the lasagna there, and I'm like, bring it back, dude.
There you go.
Yeah, don't tell me about it unless you have dry ice and you can bring that to me.
He wants to know your opinion of Jack Swarbrick's tenure as AD.
You know, that's really hard to fit in a chat thing and not be comprehensive about it. And I know I mentioned that was one of the things in chat, and that you get a few drive-by comments that are derogatory. But I'd say, overall, Jack Swarbrick did a really good job. He hired 2 very good football coaches, which is what you're measured by. But I think where he goes maybe underappreciated by the people that are not fans of his are how he kept Notre Dame in every conversation when it came to the national picture.
Good point.
And he was able to, okay, Notre Dame was able to be part of the four-team playoff. It would have been really easy for a weaker AD to get pushed out of that where they said, you have to be a conference champion to be in the four-team playoff. It didn't end up working. Between him and the SEC commissioner, they were able to push that conversation away. And just how he's been able to maintain Notre Dame being independent. Certainly the media rights deal that puts Notre Dame in the ballpark of the SEC and the Big Ten, at least through 2029, is huge because Notre Dame can be competitive with facilities, competitive with assistant coaches, competitive with head coach salaries. So there's a lot. I realize that, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy with this comment, but my vote is I give him an A.
Lost in the shuffle with all the recent items you just talked about was maneuvering the ability for the Irish to go to the ACC and remain a football independent, housing the Olympic sports. That's very important, and he got it done. And it's been a good relationship. And the 1 year football played in the conference, they won the regular season title. Yeah. So what's the big deal?
Why isn't Notre Dame doing a conference? Well, guess what? The year that they did, they won it.
We've got Dennis from Niagara Falls. Kenny Minchie always is mentioned last at the quarterback position. This is everywhere that I read. He seems to have plenty of talent with Riley Leonard out, and if he knows the playbook, I could see him slipping in as a starter. That's Dennis's opinion. Do you know what kind of grasp he has on the plays, or I guess also, is he possibly the best match to fit in Denbrock's offense? I'm kind of more intrigued about the last question.
I don't know that he's – I wouldn't say he's the best match. I think Riley Leonard is the best match to be. I think Kenny Minchie is a good match. He's probably the biggest mystery just because he was injured a lot his senior year. But I think he's a good match. I think all of them are for different reasons. But as far as like – how much does he know? I mean, I think I would be the most surprised if Kenny Minchie of those four quarterbacks was a starter. In another year, I wouldn't be surprised at all of Kenny Minchie being a starter. But most of the quarterback competitions didn't have three other guys like this. The thing, he retains things very well. Have you ever interviewed him or heard him interviewed?
Yes.
Okay. Super intelligent guy. Really athletic. And Al Golden, I might have mentioned this recently, when they played USC in October last year, Kenny Minchie was the scout team quarterback. Al Golden is like raving about him and thanked him like publicly for being such a good scout team quarterback and preparing them for Caleb Williams.
Well, the person who asked the question was right. He is kind of that fourth mentioned quarterback because you got Leonard, the possible starter, and Jelly, who almost was the Sun Bowl MVP, C.J. Carr, the great player coming out of high school who could be the starter soon, and, oh, yeah, Kenny Minchie. He's just that fourth guy.
I mean, in reality, Minchie has the second-best recruiting hype of the four. But, you know, Riley Leonard was a three-star. Steve Angeli was a three-star. Kenny was a four-star who Notre Dame poached from our favorite coach at the University of Pittsburgh.
Kenny might be the starter this year there.
He probably would be.
We've got Joe from Williams Bay, Wisconsin. I'm imagining Joe sitting on a sailboat with a nice breeze in the summertime with an umbrella drink in hand. Doesn't that sound like Williams Bay, Wisconsin? Or maybe a chunk of cheese sitting next to him, too.
If that's really what's going on in Williams Bay, he needs to have us up there and do the show from Williams Bay one time.
I don't know why. Maybe I'm just perceiving it, but cheese curds taste better in Wisconsin.
Probably because they're cheese people.
Thank you, Eric, very much. Joe wants to know, I keep hearing that we'll probably be running a lot less.
That's the kind of insight people tune in for. Why is cheese better than Wisconsin? Okay, go ahead.
He's hearing about 12 personnel being used less this year, one running back, two tight ends. What is the reason for that, and do you feel that will be an improvement, especially in short yardage situations?
You know, I think – I preface this by saying I think the biggest trap that we as journalists and observers get in spring is extrapolating too much. You see something, you're like, okay, this is what it's going to be in the fall. Part of the reason we aren't seeing as much 12 personnel is Kevin Bauman is coming back from an ACL. He's not participating. Mitchell Evans is not participating. Eli Reardon is being babied, you know, slow moving along. So not a lot of reps for Eli right now. And so they also want to get a look at all these wide receivers. They got a lot of bodies to sift through. So it doesn't make sense. I think they know what they have in the tight ends. And so I think we're over-connecting that. Now, I will say this. I do think that Mike Denbrock wants to have games where there isn't as much 12. Not a season like that,
right,
but games. There's certain teams that they're going to match up better with their wide receivers than they will with the tighter formations or the, you know, multiple tight end looks. I would say overall in the season, a slight reduction maybe, but in certain games, yeah, that's possible. You'll see a lot less of it in some games.
All right, getting a little short on time, so I'm going to go all the way down to my last question because I'm just kind of intrigued by this, and I read your answer, but I'm still going to bring it up because we do have a new Professional Football League, as the XFL and the USFL combined into the XFL, and they're going to be starting here, I think, very, very soon. I thought Tim from Nantucket, Massachusetts, asked an interesting question. He said
there
that...
There once was a man from Nantucket.
I'll let you go ahead and finish that. I'm just going to eat my cheese curds. Okay. Tim wants to know, simply, does Pro Day now include scouts from the alternate league run by The Rock? Are there general scouts who are not employed by any team? Of course, this Pro Day is for NFL executives and coaches, but that is kind of intriguing with this other league that is looking for talent to give them that one last chance of playing football and getting seen by the NFL. You wonder if they're involved at all.
You know, I think it would be expensive for them to go to all these pro days because they're not investing as much in the players. They're going to get the NFL's runoff. They're going to get guys
leftovers
that are cut. Yeah, they're going to get the leftovers. They're not, you know, going to get, oh, Joe Alt's going to sign with this league instead of the NFL.
It's not going to be Jim Kelly going to the Houston Gamblers.
Although Chipotle got him to dress up in a Chipotle worker outfit today like he worked there.
I love it.
Yeah, his new endorsement. But so I would say their best, you know, you're still counting pennies when you're in a league like that. The money isn't flush like it is in the NFL. So you're better off waiting for guys to get cut from teams. And you can look at film. I mean, if there's really somebody you wanted, but who would you – I mean, would you really be there looking for, like, DJ Brown? DJ Brown's probably not going to get drafted, probably will get invited to a camp, and then he'll get cut. And that's a guy that probably would be good to play in that league. But what are you gaining by seeing him? The NFL gained something by watching Thomas Harper, because Thomas Harper had a really good pro day. He was really fast. He did well in the jumps. If they like his film, he may sneak in the back end of the draft. If not, he's going to get an invite to a camp and have a chance to make a roster.
Sam Hartman could be a candidate.
Absolutely.
You can read all of Eric's chat. His transcript is available right now at InsideIndySports.com, and you can be a part of the fun next Wednesday at noon at InsideIndySports.com. 549 at WSBT. Sure.
This is the Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat Twitter question of the day from Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
All right, 5:54, quick segment here, Twitter question of the day. Eric and Darren with you. We asked you yesterday if, and hopefully not the case, Riley Leonard continues to have injury problems. Can Notre Dame make the 12-team playoff with Angeli, Minchie, and Carr? 78.9% said yes. 21.1% said no. So everyone very confident in the quarterback depth. We shift away from football for this, since we're in the Sweet 16 of the men's basketball tournament. This is always talked about. It's picked up some steam. I want to know what you think. Should the number of teams that make the NCAA men's basketball tournament change? Three choices. No, say it was 68. Yes, add more teams. Yes, less teams. Eric?
No. Keep it at 68.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
It's perfect.
What's wrong?
There's nothing wrong.
There's always going to be people that complain. How many of those teams would win the national championship?
The bigger problem is Indiana State should get in over Virginia's in this sequence.
The SEC doesn't need more teams. It just means less.
The commissioner looked kind of foolish by saying that they should give more bids to the bigger schools and take it away from the little guy, which is just, that's just mean. All right, Eric, what do you have coming up at InsideIndySports.com?
Man, we have so much recruiting stuff going on, including the announcement of Anthony Sacca's commitment, which will be Saturday. I have a women's basketball notebook breaking down the Sweet 16 matchup with Oregon State tomorrow. We have the chat transcript, Hannah Hidalgo on the podcast, Football Never Sleeps, and much, much more. And practice highlights from the other day.
That's a good, good Friday if you just sit down and go through all that.
That's right. Just put your feet up and take your tablet and enjoy it.
Do your reading during commercial breaks of the Sweet 16. How about that?
Yeah, you're not missing anything in the Cardinal-Dodger game unless you're a Dodger fan.
I'll see you next week. Always enjoy talking to you.
Sounds great. Thank you.
That's Eric Hansen. Check him out, InsideIndySports.com. SportsBeat continues in just a moment on Sports Radio 960 WSBT.
Hey everyone, Saltgrass Steakhouse is now open in Mishawaka. Wrangle up the crew and head down to Saltgrass Mishawaka for an unforgettable experience. Sink your teeth into mouth-watering, char-grilled, certified Angus beef steaks. Sip on ice-cold craft cocktails. And don't forget to try the famous Spicy Range Rattlers, all made daily in the Scratch Kitchen. Start making delicious memories at Saltgrass Mishawaka, 5126 North Main Street, across from Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Dine with us today.